Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast, and today is, I'm just sad. I don't like that I'm even recording this right now, but Brody Stevens, who, if you love comedy, you know who he is. You've probably followed him on social media or hopefully gotten to see him live and know how he truly was one of the best performers, comedians, most interesting human beings you'll ever come across. Dynamic, kind, warm, versatile. It's not enough positive adjectives to describe Stephen Brody Stevens. He passed away. And so we wanted to re-release the episode that we recorded with him, because it's just really hard to process something like this, and thousands of comedians and people that came across Brody that knew him well, that kind of knew him, that were best friends with him, which everyone felt like they were best friends with him, you know. I remember the moment I met Brody, at the Best Damn Sports Show, after watching him on a public access show in Seattle when I was in middle school, and I was so starstruck. And little did I know, I'd become friends with him and do thousands of shows with him and have long late night conversations in the Comedy Store parking lot with him in coffee shops. And by the way, these are all experiences and accounts that everyone has, because you just... you got excited to be around Brody. You love to see him. And every comic, if they had an opportunity, would go out of the way to stay late night and watch him at the Comedy Store. I was fortunate enough to be brought up by him on stage in the original room many a nights. He gave me such sweet intros. You know, even if his set didn't go the way he wanted, he'd still power through and find a way to be like, this next guy... give him what you didn't give me. Give him the respect he deserves. He's from Seattle. He gets it. He knows who Jay Buhner is. He's danced with Sandra Bullock. He knows how to get it done. It's so silly. Anytime my mom or a friend was in town, I would go out of my way to be like, we have to stay and watch Brody Stevens. You're gonna lose your mind. There's nothing like this. There's nothing like Brody. And it just fucking sucks. It just fucking sucks, man. There's no other way to put it. He had demons. He was dealing with so much. He was off and on meds. I don't know the true extent of where he was emotionally these last few weeks, but from what I've been reading online, it looked like he was doing all right, doing his podcast and doing shows. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is with stuff like this. You know, people never want to pry too much into other people's business. You know, you want to just assume everyone's okay and do the bare minimum, because, you know, it's a touchy thing to, like, insert yourself in someone else's life, and you don't want to pry. You don't want to feel like you're making them feel like they need help. The fact of the matter is, you know, a lot of people do, and they need that extra reach out and that extra connection. And Brody was all about connecting with people on and off stage. He was the master of it. He truly knew how to get to know someone and open up real quick, which is a tough thing to do, you know, as a comedian and a human being, just to open up right out of the gate and be you, be vulnerable, and just and bring that to the table and He was just the best. And I hate that I'm never going to see him again. I love you, Brody. As a Comedy Store so brilliantly posted on the marquee, we enjoyed it. And that is an understatement. You were just one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. And to know you was, I felt lucky. I felt lucky to be someone that you call a friend and that you said hi to every time you saw, you know? And I cherish those moments because it was always special for me. And I know that's the case for everyone. I know everyone misses you, Brody, and I hope you're feeling better up in heaven, and you're, you know, you're doing some late night sets for everybody up there, and you lived a great life down here, man, and it was not done by any means, but I just now I'm gonna go back and just try to remember all the good stuff, you know, and not let myself get so get so down about you not being here. You know, that's kind of what I've been doing the last 24 hours is just to try to process this, is watching and reading so much stuff about you and trying to celebrate you. And I think that's part of the healing process, and I think that's the move, you know, and that's why we're re-releasing this podcast from July 21st, 2016 with our friend, with everybody's friend, the great Brody Stevens. Rest in peace, buddy. We love you so much, and thanks for everything you gave us. I'm gonna miss you. Enjoy the episode.
Are we starting? Is that how go? You just roll right into it.
Let's get going.
You don't want to do warm up.
No, I don't want to do hell gigs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make eye contact with you guys later.
It's all right.
I don't want to get roped in to, you know, a hell gig, meaning dealing mostly with audience that doesn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
A paid audience.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not just fundraiser. That's okay. But, you know, bottom of the barrel, Los Angeles paid audience. It's just I can't be around the energy anymore of that. And that's what's caused me some problems, like doing some warm-up gigs. You know, it's just not fun.
Yeah.
And I'm working too hard. And here's the other thing. It's like I say, oh, I've done 3,000 television shows. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's 3,000 times you're not on TV.
Right.
Right.
And that's 3,000 times you're putting out that energy. Mm-hmm. Still not on TV, but you're putting out the energy for other people, which is great. So I have I like that. I like that I've helped comedians and they appreciate that because it does come back to you. And I would ever be like, I should be on this show. I mean, I'm wired, you know, as a performer. It's like, here's a mic. Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. And like, that's kind of
being the audience warm up guy is like being wingman for your buddy. Like he's getting laid, but he's like, you're still necessary for the process.
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, I'm a wingman. I connect the energy of the crowd to the performer. Yeah.
You also make it look so easy, and I don't think people understand how not easy it is.
That's a very difficult gig.
It's not easy in a sense that you're dealing with people.
It's not just about being funny. You're dealing with also people. You know, when to come in, when to not come in.
Oh, yeah.
People from all over, you know, and I guess that's what spots at the Comedy Store, I'm sure,
will make you stronger. Right? Yeah, definitely. Well, for warm-up, for me, I've done a lot of basic cable, half hour to hour to tape shows. Yeah. Not like a sitcom where you're there all night and you're redoing and redoing. Yeah. But those guys make pretty good money. It's network, so they're there all night. And
4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, and you're compensated for it.
Sure.
Me, I was at Best Damn Sports Show, which was back in the day. That was 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basic cable on Fox Sports. And I got every high school football team from L.A., every community college baseball. So I really cut my teeth. It's not like it's a warm-up. You can make relationships. You're getting paid a couple bucks. But I did that. I cut my teeth there. Then I went to Chelsea, and it was just that was all comedy, which was nice. And it was like, okay, this is how it's supposed to be.
Right, because that audience is already tuned into comedy, whereas like Best Damn Sports Show, like you said, it's a high school football team that isn't necessarily
How would you relate to
comedy?
A high school football team?
Like, easy. Well, I played sports.
Sure.
He wants me to go on a high energy. Well, the thing, because I played sports.
Right.
It was a sports show,
right,
and these are sports teams. So if I had guys slouching or like bad attitude, even I go, look, you play football, right? See that guy over there, Michael Irvin, Michael Strahan? They're Super Bowl rings, three of them.
Yeah,
would you like to talk to them? Well, they don't want to talk to you because you're not bringing it. Let's go. So you get home, and the coaches would love it. Never, ever say a coach, hey, take it easy on my guys. Never. One teacher at one time.
Well,
teacher did what?
Yeah.
Said I was being too hard on the guys, but they were special ed kids.
Oh, okay.
And they had been there too. Not special ed meaning like continuation, but like edgy kids.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Special edgy kids.
Yeah. Oh, edgy. Okay. Not
continuation school.
Gotcha.
They're done by 12. Play ping pong, done by 12. That's what I would get. That was that particular guy. You know, it's like anything and that's the thing. You would get repeat audiences. I go, can you get another high? Can we stop with Marshall and North Hollywood High School baseball? Let's mix it up a little bit.
Would the coaches, you had to rag on coaches at some point, and the kids must love that, right? If you sing.
Yeah, I would just, of course. It was like they're sports guys, so you can like get on them, and they get on you. And that was the thing. I feel like they like it. People are afraid to get on people. They're afraid. It's like. So these kids want to be yelled at.
Yeah.
They want direction. They want somebody who cares.
They want a coach they can follow. And I feel like you said, your past experiences in sports really helped you relate. I do the Rose Bowl comedy show every year where you perform for the two Rose Bowl teams at the Improv.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I've seen so many comics, like, bomb because they're, like, they're in a room full of jocks and they can't, like, command. And they're just, like, and they're, like, nerd guys. So they're in a room full of the guys.
Boy,
that's
a poorly cast lineup. You have to know. I mean, I guess, you know.
I won't say any names, but, like, I've seen, like, really good comics go up there. And they're surrounded by the people that used to bully them in high school.
Exactly.
So they're, like, they're totally scared.
But this is your chance to fight back.
Yeah.
And the athletes
and
like
it
when you get in their face. How dare you dish? I'll slap that chicken wing out at you. I'll go at you. They like that. They like
of
the
course.
Face. And that's what I would do.
Yeah, that and like, and then when I do the shows, they love when I do it because I'm 4 foot nothing and I'm talking to a 300-pound lineman. Like,
great visual.
Like, I'll fucking kick your ass.
I mean, you jump on him. Have you like jumped on a 300-foot-pound lineman from the stage? Like stage dive on him. You could do that.
What am I going to do? Hurt him?
No, you won't. It'll be it'll be funny. You should do it this year.
It's like one of those koala backpacks.
You could jump on a guy, on a 300-foot guy or 300-pound.
Yeah.
300-foot.
Well, I mean, he looks 300 feet to me because I'm very tiny. But no, I could jump on him and land on him like he's one of those like giant stunt crash pads, like those guys.
But you'll bounce off him.
Yeah,
I distinctly remember talking about football guys when I did the NFL show that was on Saturdays.
Yeah,
So we had.
Brody, I remember.
You remember that show?
Well, because I did a segment with my buddy with the Vuvuzela one time, and you were there on that panel at Fox Sports. You don't remember it?
No.
But I came. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was on the panel?
Yes. It was like you were part of that show.
Locked out.
Yeah. Add it to the resume.
I'm serious. I'm going to go back. And,
this was maybe like 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I did the NFL show also, and that was on Saturdays. I was with Michael Irvin, and Tony Siragusa was on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was in studio all the time. They had a band always at the end. We remember we had Jurassic 5. They were good.
Hey, awesome.
And, but I remember Siragusa, I jumped on him, like jumped in his, he's like, you know, I bounced off him. That's how big he was.
Wow.
And I weigh 200 and something pounds, 215 or whatever.
You're a built dude.
And I jumped on him, and I just fell back. These football guys are big.
They're solid muscle, too.
They're Well, Tony Siragusa, I don't know. But he was a great athlete. He was fast. Right.
Well,
and he was,
and
you
it's
know.
Like those guys, it's amazing when you see a guy like Vince Wilfork,
who's
like 325 pounds, just run like a 4.9 40. You're like, how the fuck does that happen?
That's not physically just possible.
You shouldn't be able to be that big but move that quickly.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you say all the athletes on like Best Damn were just athletes in general, like at the Rose Bowl show, want you to like give them shit.
Yeah.
But I have heard stories from like the ESPYs and stuff, how a lot of the athletes, especially when you know, when the host would make jokes about athletes and they cut to them and none of them are into it. And then I've heard rumors, some even told me once, and I don't want to even believe that it's true, that Ken Griffey Jr. like complained at one time at the ESPYs afterwards because he didn't like a joke that was made about him and they didn't have a good sense of humor about himself. I feel like that was somebody just trying to fucking take me down a peg and crush my childhood dreams and tell me Griffey's not a good guy. But
pretty sure.
But I feel like he's dealing with so many. Yeah, you know him.
Yeah.
And?
Loves me. I've done shows for Ken Griffey Jr.
What?
Yeah.
Just became Adam's hero.
Yeah.
He was already my hero, dude.
Well, he was on Best Damn Sports Show once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw him there. He probably remembered my face because when I did a show in Orlando. It was for the Major League Baseball Players Association.
And he lived there.
Yeah, he lived there.
Yeah.
So Justin Verlander was there, Frank Robinson. I'd done it for like 3 years. Matt Bronger and I actually did that gig. It was through Funny or Die, I think, originally booked it. And then they ended up bringing me back the next couple years. So I performed for a lot of these baseball guys.
Oh, my God.
Some of them were rookies then. And
those are some of the most fun shows you've ever done.
Not necessarily, because it's tough. It's tough. The baseball guys are tough.
Yeah.
And for me now, I think it would be easier now because my experiences and all that. But going on, you know, 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, that was, I did good. They liked it. Yeah. But it's still, I think I would do better now. Not only because I'm a better comedian, but.
Do you think baseball players take themselves a little too more seriously than football players? Is that part of it or just...
Some do. I mean, there's some guy, like every team, there's some like serious guys. There's some, you know, you have different backgrounds, conservative, not too many liberal guys, I would say. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, you're doing comedy for jocks. I did comedy for the Texas Rangers. I came out. That one was, again, nerve wracking.
Sure.
Because it was one of my first ones, but it was fun. But what got me prep for that is I played baseball at Arizona State.
Yeah.
So I would do the banquets. I come back and do the alumni game. This is all the alumni stuff, the banquets, the golf tournament. So I always had these major leaguers in the crowd.
Yeah.
Right.
So
ever do any like little league pizza parties and just shit on the kids and be like, you fat fuck, you're never going to be anything. Keep eating that pizza.
Wow.
Toby.
Who's this Toby character?
As someone who used to bully Adam as a child.
No, Toby might have been me, because when I was in the fifth grade and I was a real big kid, and real big is being generous.
You were overweight?
Yeah. And I want to say I was...
Like Adam Ebay overweight?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Maybe like 170 in the fifth grade.
Okay.
So he was...
That's big.
He was like a mini Vince Wilfork.
But I was fast. And as I've mentioned on this podcast before, we've coined the phrase, I was quick fat.
Quick fat. I like it.
Yeah.
Quick fat as opposed to like quicksand, quick fat. That's what comes to my mind.
Yeah.
I will say this. No, I don't really yell at kids. I'll tell you why.
That has to justify it. I'll tell you why I don't yell at kids.
Yeah.
Well, I've done coaching instruction, Joe Torre baseball camp. I've worked winter camps with kids, you know, up to like 12 years of age, 5 to 12. I'm good with them. The kids, you know, I'm good with it. I get it. I don't think I could ever be too tough, but there was a time, Best Damn Sports Show, there were a bunch of fourth graders. Now, these aren't, you know, all kids cry, but they were, it was like,
I love how this story
is a great preface,
but it was take your kids to school day or going on a get to see Best Damn Sports Show.
Sure. Gotcha.
And I remember this kid was over there going, hey buddy, what are you doing over here? Let me see your pass, like that. And he started crying.
Oh.
And I said, like, they started crying because I kind of teased him about,
sure,
he wasn't ready for that.
Right. So at that point, I said, you know, you can't really, you got to really be sensitive, because you don't want, it looks bad. I made a kid cry, and
is there anything more horrifying, whether you're a kid and a kid you're playing with starts crying, or even as an adult and you're like talking to a kid and all of a sudden you like burst into tears like that? Like, I think no matter what age you are, you're like, oh God, what do I do?
Yeah. Well, like, looking
it's
back,
so scary.
But the kid didn't play sports. Okay. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. He was there for like, who takes who go, what fourth grader is going to a TV show? Or whatever, a four-year, whatever he was.
If it's not Saved by the Bell, I don't know.
Yeah. You could yell at some kids. Some, yeah, sure. You know, like I said, these, you know, when you're they're younger, you got to like, you know, but a high school kid, F it.
Yeah.
Sit the F up or get out.
I like it.
But here's the other thing. You learn, not necessarily with sports kids, but maybe just with these kids in general. For example, I would get a lot of the Latino kids. I'd get all black, or I'd get all Latino, mm-hmm. all Asian. So you learn actually what you can say and what you can do.
Yeah.
You got to like, that's a tightrope.
Yeah.
But I remember I would have a lot of the Latino kids. Yes. And they would be there, a lot of them with their girlfriends, like putting their arm around them. You know, it's like.
They get really sexual real early.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Then numbers are proof. But I wouldn't make those guys get sensitive. It's like I wouldn't do that to them. You could tell like certain guys, like a white guy with a girlfriend. Yeah, I'm going to go after you.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll put you on blast in a funny way.
Yeah. Right.
But a Latino kid, I don't do that. It's like they're a little sensitive.
Chismo.
Yeah. So you learn that ego. And it's not about like. You just learn that.
Yeah.
So you let people be. Asian kids, you can kind of go at for being smart.
Yeah.
Or like turning. How dare you? You know what? They get it. They can choose to get you or not.
Sure.
They can like, okay, we get you. We're smarter than you.
Yeah.
And we'll laugh. But then they can go, you know what? We could easily say no to you.
Yeah.
You know that, right, Brody?
Yeah.
But I'm a good guy.
Wow. You feel that. And you just you learn that from just doing it. That's incredible experience that you gain. To just take into every other comedic situation after. What about black people? Always receptive?
Black people like when you come at them. You come at them and you learn, you know, the fake. They like the confidence, the arrogance, the fake stuff, actually.
Right.
Because I had a friend, I performed in New York, right? So I lived in New York from 97 to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, I barked at the Comedy Cellar.
Okay.
I did late night spots. I was passed at Stand Up New York, so we do late night spots there, but a lot of Lower East Side, Luna Lounge, hipster, that kind of alternative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing all that. Surf Reality, Collective Unconscious.
Is that kind of where you really honed your style? Like, I'm curious when what you do now really took shape.
Well, a lot of it was warm up. The reason, you know, here's the deal with the warm up when you have it on a consistent basis. 1,000 shows, for example, at Best Amateur Chelsea. It's like you have your own little survey every day. You've got a group of, you know, they're not a stranger. I mean, it's not stand-up, but you got a group of 80 people. You can do, like, you're learning psychology, group psychology, how their energy really does affect the show. If you want to go not necessarily into comedy, but stand-up world, but technical world, Hollywood, when they're not bringing that energy, when they're slouched, things go wrong. Lights go out. Teleprompter doesn't work. The talent could really feel the energy.
Yeah.
My whole idea is I try to connect the audience with the talent, not just, hey, we're energy, and then every 10 minutes, hey, that's the way to the crowd. I like to actually make them feel like they have an investment in these guys. So that's kind of was my selling point. Same thing with, you know, at Midnight or Chelsea. I never, ever gave away candy at those shows. Best Damn, after 90 minutes, I would give out candy.
Yeah.
And that's not a metaphor just for our listeners, because there are a lot of audience warm-up guys that actually literally give out candy.
Oh, yeah. Some of them have belts, you know, full of, like, you know, fanny packs full of candy.
By the way, you're getting Adam very excited right now talking about belts full of candy.
But, there you go.
Well, like, and you're more than almost any other comic I've ever seen, you're big on, like, audience analysis. You will, like, stand up there and literally look at your crowd, and if someone's on their phone, you love to point it out. If someone's talking, you point out, like, you don't let anything slide. Like,
if they're wearing, like, a Boston Red Sox cap, then that, like, stirs. It's amazing, too, the, like, plethora of knowledge and info you have, like, of a place or a look or a vest or, like, you know, like, it just spawns Has your brain always worked like that, where you see like a certain coat and you're just like, you know, Back to the Future, yes, great movie. Well, then you go into, you know.
I could do that. Yeah, yeah. Things will trigger it. Yeah. And a lot of that has to be with energy, has to be also where I'm at. Yes, I can do it, but I feel like it can't be forced. Like, where am I from? What? But it's energy. That's all it is. Yeah. And it's just, people can learn this. Yeah. People can learn body language. I can tell, arms crossed negative. I know that. I went to Arizona State. I studied nonverbal communication. I played baseball at Arizona State. We learn all about positive energy and being supportive and focusing on what's good. So, like, if you play golf, guys go, oh, what'd you shoot today? I shot, 90, or I shot, you know, 5 under. Mm-hmm. And I remember our story of our coach. He said, what did you shoot? And he go, I shot 20. What? He goes, yeah, 20. 20 good shots. All he thought about, you know, you focus on. I mean, that's an extreme example, sure. I think. But you can never say, don't strike. It's just basic stuff. Don't strike out. You want to say, get on base. You know? And so we learned that about positive self-talk, visualization. I couldn't do it back then. And we had the top guys. Every baseball team now has mental coaches.
Yeah, sports psychologists.
Sports psychologists.
Right, right.
At Arizona State.
That's
one
industry now.
Exactly. And one reason why I went there is because I knew at Arizona State we would have access to the major league.
Right, because of the spring training.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that whole system.
Yeah, like when I was a fat kid, it was like, it wasn't like, oh, you ate 15 Pop-Tarts in one sitting. It was like, do you know how many I got in my mouth at one time? I'm focusing on the positive.
Positive energy.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a way to look at it.
Yeah.
That's a positive Pop-Tart. Positive Pop-Tart.
See,
I mean,
they should release those positive Pop-Tarts. Like, the Pop-Tarts, little, like, positive affirmations, like burned into the bottom of the Pop-Tart. Like,
it's a great idea. Little fortune cookies on the bottom.
I like the s'mores.
Have a great day today.
S'mores Pop-Tarts are maybe.
Smile at people. You know, like just little things, like burned into the
Pop-Tart. Give a stranger a hug. Brown sugar Pop-Tart.
There you go. I love brown sugar, maple brown sugar. And I'm not, here's the deal. I didn't create the wheel. I'm doing like scientific situations.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm just following that, and comedy is so into, like, you know, you want to be different. That's why I shaved my beard. Everybody's got a beard. Shaved it.
Really?
Yeah. It's like everyone, you got to be yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if I just feel like this is myself, and as I'm going off, I'm looking at lights, digitalizing lights. But yes, warm-up is great. It really helped me. But or like saying early on, you want to go to that. Affect more people.
Yeah.
You can make more money. Let's be honest. And I'm at the point now where I'm 45 and I feel like, okay, I could be smarter. You know, you work hard, but you want to work smart.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, because one of your catchphrases is literally you go on stage and say positive energy.
It does work.
Yes. And this is not just a get her done type catchphrase. Like, there's like a mantra behind it that you're actually preaching.
You didn't start saying that to sell t-shirts. You started saying that on stage because why?
Well, I don't always. I mean, here's the deal. I don't always say. I don't really say it all that much. I do have a positive.
It became infectious. So you're right. You don't say it all the time, but it was became such an people love you so much, and it picked up, and it became infectious because again, nobody had that in them.
But it's also funny to say that. It's funny to be the sports psychologist guy. Right. Like, positive energy does work because it worked for me.
Yeah.
Because I was not going for it in terms of running. Let's say getting trained in college and we had to run. I hated running. It was like, that's negative right there. Didn't like it. Wasn't into it. And then I had to make it fun. And go for it. So that's where I go, yeah, they would like threaten us with running. Running was bad.
Right.
Where you're bad, you're going to run. Mm-hmm. So I had to make it positive. So you're going to run Mill Avenue. You go run to Mill. That's like a 2 mile run.
I was just there.
There you go. Mill Avenue in Tempe. Yeah. And I go, Mill Thrill. Yes. So I started doing that and we started like laughing, but we're running.
Right.
And then it would be, you guys are running Hardy Party, Priest Feast. So that's what I just named them and had fun with it, and it made me run better.
Right.
So that was one example. Now, you could be annoying. Not that I would always do it, but made running better for me.
But I think you apply that to most. I mean, and that's also the sign of a true comic, where you take some sort of you know, not a favorable situation, and you make it you choose to make it better by making light of it. Same thing when I was pledging a fraternity at USC, we had to run in our suits around campus, like late at night, like after eating like burritos, like these giant, massive burritos at this little swanky Mexican restaurant in the hood. And then we had to run in our suits full. And I remember just being in the back, being like, do you guys mind if we can swing by Quiznos real quick? I got some coupons. And I knew that some of these guys weren't going to be friends of mine because they were like, shut the fuck up, Ray. Take this serious, man.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, oh,
I had a guy like that.
And we're the guys running that, in suits.
And the guys that laughed. And then I was like, seriously, man, these coupons expire. And I would come in. I'm like, they expired tonight. We're real close. Just swing by. And this is like in our like ninth lap. I mean, it's a time when you're trying to focus on getting through it. Nobody wants to make light of it except for me because I'm like, this is the only way I can handle it. Right. And then a couple of the guys who I'm still lifelong friends with were laughing and started chiming in with me to piss off the guys that were not into it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, that's
other guys in the line are like, dude, Ray's got some sick coupons.
Yeah. But if you don't like do stuff like that, like, I mean, it would have been a tumultuous experience for you to right. You could have had if you didn't like to run and then you had to go through all that, then baseball all of a sudden becomes just a negative cloud over that, right? If you don't choose to.
Well, you have to be positive because it's a long season. You're playing with all these different guys. You want to play. You want to win? You want to be good? You got to visualize good stuff.
Did you take steroids?
No. But I by playing baseball, and then I went up to Seattle. See, yes. I had no idea. Like, I'm going to be a warm-up. I'm going to work on a sports show.
You thought you were going to be facing Nolan Ryan at some point.
Pitching. He was a good hitter, too. He hit a home run. He's hit home runs. Well, I wanted to play baseball.
So that was a wicked right hook. Just ask Robin Ventura.
There you go.
Yeah.
Clocked him several times.
That was great.
I was totally into baseball. That's what I wanted to do. I liked throwing. I mean, I got picked on. Don't get me wrong. It didn't, I didn't like that part of it. It was still fun. I love pitching.
The fraternizing?
Yeah, or just, that kind of stuff. I wasn't into it. Again, I wasn't into, like, being a jerk, really. Yeah. I'm a nice guy.
And that is a piece of baseball, yeah?
Yeah, I think some of that jock behavior, which I'm not really into, to be honest.
You were like, can't we just be here and, like, work hard and get good?
Exactly.
And make it to the show?
Like, the fact that we're playing a game?
Go as far as we can go.
Yeah.
So, care. And we were pretty good. It was a good experience for me in high school. But I went to college and still wanted to play baseball. I guess I was funny along the way, but I always wanted to play baseball, and I took it as far as I can go. And I wanted to go get an education. I just knew this. I just knew by common sense, go to college, play sports, don't do drugs, don't drink. Drink a little bit in college.
Yeah.
Respect authority.
Yeah.
Don't get arrested.
Yeah.
Don't steal. Don't do that stuff.
By the way,
life lessons.
These are basic.
Stevens.
No, these are things that we're all going to put on the strawberry Pop-Tart. Like, these are the positive affirmations.
People need to be told that. These aren't even just positive affirmations. These are just, like, rules that are just should be ingrained in you. And when I say positive affirmations, like you said, tumultuous. That made me recoil.
Yeah.
Because I don't say negative words. Words are thoughts. Thoughts are things.
Gotcha.
That's just me. That's another reason why I don't curse. I feel like...
Yeah, you don't.
I never cursed in front of my dad. I was intimidated. Sometimes I'd curse in front of my mom. I would curse around playing sports and all that. But when I cursed on stage, people didn't like it. I felt I was a big guy. I'm kind of this, aggressive. And I felt like whenever I said the F word, fuck, it would...
Shifted the energy in the room.
It would like... Yeah, exactly. So I didn't like that. And then also... When I learned to public speak, selling T-shirts at Key Arena for the Seattle Supersonics.
What?
Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, come on, Adam. I got tons of stuff.
Bro, you are such an integral part of my childhood indirectly.
He's hung out with Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
He's throwing T-shirts out.
Hugs me.
Griffey hugs you?
Yeah.
And says what?
Just gives me a hug. It's like, great job. How you doing, man? One of those deals.
Adam, do you want to give Brody a hug right now because he's hugged Ken?
We'll do a fist pound now. We'll do a fist pound.
I had Griffey's chocolate bar. I mean, that was a big deal. And again, here's an testament to how much of a fat kid I was. I bought that collector's edition Griffey chocolate bar, put it in the freezer in a box.
And you ate it?
Eventually.
Oh, I would have saved that. It would be worth money right now.
So would have I, Brody, if I hadn't been hungry on a Tuesday afternoon when Mom wasn't home.
So you
the spaghetti was sparse.
You couldn't control yourself.
No.
I get it. I understand. I had problems like that.
Self-discipline was not...
But that's how we are, Hebrew type guys, we're very sensitive and instinctive, and we can't control ourselves. Yeah. And we enjoy the moment.
Well, I was eating during the it was the folk split. You know, you're eating your feelings at that.
Oh, point. I had that feel. I had that folk split. Exactly. Yeah. We're broken families. It's made us tougher.
It does. It has made. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, you know, there's certain things maybe, like there's certain male advice that I feel like maybe I missed out on, but...
You do have a sensitive side.
But yeah, but my mom is the shit, and I feel like she did, like I don't know. I don't know, maybe my dad would have told me, like, to pull out. I don't know, like, I don't know
how. You have a child that I know of? That I don't know of?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
what's going on?
No.
It's turned into a very serious...
I know.
This is about last night.
And this is your son. Bring him out.
Oh, my God.
Bobby Ray.
Gee, how dare you think I would name him Bobby?
What's wrong with Bobby?
Oh, nothing.
Bobby Ray.
Well,
like
it makes me think of Bobby Ayala, an ex-Mariner pitcher.
There you go. Okay. I also work for Cairo Sports. That's why, because my attitude was, okay, I took baseball as far as I can go.
Yeah.
And I got sick of the jock behavior, the attitude, meaning that, I got it. I was above it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would, they weren't malicious. It's never malicious. It was never like Jew that. It was like Jew, like they were, it wasn't malicious.
Yeah.
And I always go, like a non-Jew, I usually is, Jews saying, I go, Jesus was Jewish.
Good comeback.
You want to go there? I'm spiritual. We're in Arizona right now. My father was born here. My grandmother was raised here. Where do UFOs land? Don't. So I would like get in their heads, actually. And it's funny. But so once I took an acting class, I had some extra credits my last semester there. Yeah. And I said, I'm going to take an acting class. And I took an acting class and was like, wow, it's supportive. And there's girls in there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was, I tried to be serious, but they would laugh at me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was like, all right, took another acting class because I felt like I had to learn if I wanted to be an actor, like follow my instinct of somehow getting positive attention.
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh, Brody, you're funny. Because baseball had to work very hard at just to be on the team.
By the way, not enough adults. Super over 40 duper. Say super duper.
I know, that's crazy. So,
no. You know what?
Super duper hard.
Embrace that.
I think it
brings a childlike atmosphere to the room.
I've got a glow-in-the-dark super duper ball. Yes! Give me some concrete stairs. I'll hit a bomb off the kingdom ceiling. You got to get every reference. Ken Phelps, my friend.
Ken Phelps?
Yes.
Jesus.
My uncle washed the umpire's uniforms at the kingdom.
How did he get that job?
He had his spick and span cleaners. You know where spick and span clean? God, that's a racist place to say.
Yeah, I was like, man, if he's Latino at all, that's not going to work out well.
Spick and span cleaners. And wow, looking back, I have racist family. I'm like Ben Affleck on the PBS special. I have a racist family with
references.
So
okay, so you get in the acting class. And
yeah,
you're like,
took the acting class, cute girls, people are laughing.
This is where you start recognizing, oh shit, I've got a gift for comedy. People are laughing consistently.
People were laughing around I knew I was funny around baseball. Yeah. Like, I'd make the guys laugh. Yeah. But I wasn't the funniest guy on the team, and I wasn't a performer. Like, I'd make the guys laugh in McDonald's. I'd make the guys laugh, like, on the road. You know, there's always a few guys I'd hang out with some guys, too. You wouldn't think, oh, Brody and this guy, they go see a movie. As friends.
Yeah.
You know, so you get weird, like, friendships, you know, from roommates and all that stuff. But I made people laugh, and people, like, picking on, you know, typical stuff.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel good necessarily, and it didn't make me feel confident. I knew I had something, but I wanted to see where it went. That's why I took the acting class.
Yeah.
And I didn't do stand-up. Never, ever did stand-up in Arizona. And also, to me, it's not that creative vibe. It's too sunny. I was into sports.
Yeah.
It was golf. So anyway, took the acting class. People were laughing. And, oh, okay. Took another acting class. It was just hard for me to put that – like a square peg into a yellow hole.
Right.
Or round, whatever.
It's very hard
was
for
that,
me to put
was
a square...
Was that a metaphor your acting teacher
a square
you?
Peg into a yellow hole. Like a glory hole full of urine?
I think you're...
Pretty sure Gandhi said that.
Does that mean you couldn't cry? You couldn't... Was that a metaphor for you couldn't do the exercise where you like... Where they're like, all right, now you're... Picture yourself being born.
Exactly. Yeah. I can't do that. I can't go there. I can't I can't remove those layers.
Mm-hmm.
But... And I wasn't even good at public speaking. But I felt that I enjoyed it, and then I was done with baseball. I actually coached my last year. They kept me around. I knew I had something where the coach is keeping you around. They're paying for your school when you're done with your arm injury. Stick around. I'll pay for your school. I got to go to the College World Series. I didn't do anything.
Holy shit.
I was in uniform. All I had to do was count the heads on the bus. But when I was done playing.
You had a free ride for that.
Oh, yeah.
Omaha, Nebraska.
You got it. Rosenblatt Stadium, 1993. And then... I got to coach first base on the road. Coach Brock, again, liked having me around. So he would, on the road, well, he wanted to coach in the, he used to coach third base. So then he went to the dugout. And the graduate assistant couldn't travel on the road.
Okay.
I could. I still had eligibility, so I coached first base. Even though I did nothing for first base.
First base, you don't do much. Third base is when you got all the signals.
Yeah, right? I never did it. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just there for positive energy. What? You got it. You're on base. think about stealing. Back. Back. He's got a quick move. Yeah. And then I just remember the dugouts like yelling at me, nose jokes. I just didn't like it. Jesus. I didn't like it. It doesn't feel good with like personal attacks. And
you
I didn't
defend
like
yourself.
It.
Nobody wants a first base coach that's turning around going, shut the fuck up. Or shut the frick up in your case.
Yeah. Well, I curse back then.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't not curse, but am I going to be able to? My thing is, can I curse selling T-shirts for the Seattle Supersonics? Can't do it.
Nope.
Could I curse being a tour guide at Radio City Music Hall, which I was? Can't do it.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Could I curse being a barker at the Comedy Cellar? Maybe not.
It's New York.
But still, you're trying to present a product that, you know, you're representing, you know.
I'm smart of where I'm at. And then when I was at Best Damn Sports Show, I was constantly told by George Greenberg, head executive, very important guy, still there, creator of stuff, runs it. Brody, you got to keep it PG, keep it clean. Really, every day, harped on that, not being dirty. And I don't curse when I do warm up. I don't do any of that. I'm very...
It's kind of ingrained in you now.
Exactly. So that's why I learned that. So it's not to say I won't cuss, and it's not... I mean, and I'm... Look, I have negative energy sometimes when I'm hungry. Or when
that might be
I'm in a hurry.
Yeah, that might be when people are most upset. I was talking about that with somebody the other day about how, like, the things that are humanly possible when you're hungry. Like, you literally, there have probably been marriages that have ended because some guy just didn't get a bag of Funyuns quick enough.
I've made mistakes being, hunger is a big thing because, and especially doing warm-up. Where you're physically into it. I mean, your heart rate's going up. You're dealing with people. You're sweating. Yeah. You got to eat.
Yeah.
There's a reason why there's constantly food on television productions. It matters.
Yeah.
It's not just there for, hey, where you get food for fun. You really need it.
Yeah. And it also it puts people in a great mood because why are you going to get pissed off about something small when you got yogurt-covered pretzels over at the craft service table?
There you go. And moderation. Moderation.
Yeah.
I had a cookie yesterday. I do moderation. I'm good with like giving myself one chocolate treat a day.
Yeah.
I won't do two.
I think that's
it. If I'm going to have yogurt at lunch, you're not getting it at dinner, Brody. You're going to have to go with nuts, antioxidant, cranberry nuts. From 7-Eleven.
That's a little plug for cranberry nuts. I want to know what the craziest thing at Best Damn Sports Show you saw was.
Donald Trump. Wow. Tie-in, because he's hosting tonight. No, the craziest thing I saw a guy get bit by a snake. I saw Pat Croce, the owner of the Philadelphia 76ers, get bit by a snake.
Oh, God.
That happened.
Was it like a Jack Hanna type guy where he like brings out a snake like, hey, this is a snake from the Amazon. Oh, God, it's biting the owner.
Well, the owner of the it was actually in an aquarium, an empty aquarium. Is that what they call it?
A fish tank.
Yeah, it's recycling.
Yeah,
it's a snake tank.
Yeah, snake tank.
So the snake was in there, and it was Jeremy Roenick was on the show.
Yeah,
he would co-host sometimes.
Hockey player.
Exactly. Good, and he's NBC. This thing about Best Damn Sports Show. You know how many people came through that show?
No,
that are.
Chris Rose.
Okay, Chris Rose. Jalen Rose.
John Sally.
John Sally. Yeah. But
wow.
But I love John.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking
Big time.
Who's gone from there, still going. Love John Sally. Yeah. Three-time.
But has, like, award-winning podcasts and has, like, primetime commentators.
I will say that Stephen A. Smith came through there.
Did he really?
Yeah. Michael Strahan.
Did you know when you met Stephen A. Smith that he would be as have such a fruitful career?
No, I mean, I thought he was already, like, famous for Fox Sports. But, I mean, wasn't, like, what he is now. Yeah. Definitely not as controversial. But he would always come in. Like, I would have candy. He'd always want the candy first, like, before I had the bags open.
You heard it here first.
So Stephen would want the
Stephen
candy.
Stephen Smith loves
like,
candy.
Brody, I see that you're reaching for that Kit Kat bar. Yeah. But I just want to say that that looks like a Kit Kat bar that I would like to have before you put your hands on it. Also, Kobe's going for 40 tonight. And if you want to discriminate against that decision by me, to say that if and it will be, give me that Kit Kat bar.
Very nice. Thank I you. Like that. Thank you. I've been looking for applause on that one. I wanted to bring a sound effect machine. That was good. He would, Stephen A., he would joke with me because it was very, like, you know, saying I look Arabic kind of thing. Like a joke. Like, oh, Osama. Like a joke. And I would call him Urkel with a goatee. So I'd come back at him. He liked it. So he would come at me.
How do you come back from Urkel with a goatee?
He'd call me like Osama. I go, keep it going for Urkel with a goatee. He would do that. Chris would go. I'd go, I was an athlete. And then I go, Chris is an athlete too. I say, yeah. I go, he was in Ohio. Chris Rose. We go, second team All-State hopscotch. So I had that for Chris. Tom would always do, like, Brody's. Keep it
Tom
going
Arnold.
For
yeah.
Tom Arnold would go, Brody's. He served. He's a good guy. He was over in Iraq. Or he was over in the Gulf War. He was an Iraqi soldier. So Tom always set me up for that.
Yeah.
And then every day Michael Irvin would come over when we would start the show. So I'd have him come over, and we'd do, like, 5 minutes. He'd, like, make fun of me for... like being, I don't know, like he always thought Brody like a virgin. Like they always, Brody doesn't get girls. Come on. And I go. And then Michael would talk about going to the airport. I'd pull him over. Just like driving while black or whatever. We would joke around, basically.
That's huge. That's great for you, by the way, to have that for the audience, too. To have some sort of like.
Oh, yeah. They would love it because.
They trust you, too. They're like, oh, well, Michael Irvin and Tom Arnold.
These guys love this guy.
This guy.
There's that. And I bring him over. It makes it for a better show. I remember every guest I would be on, most every guest, I'd always go off to this. Like, because they'd be behind a door like by themselves. I'd come over and get a rocket. Good job.
Yeah.
You know, like it would be a lot of times it'd be like a college kid just drafted, like some number one pick. Yeah. So they would come on the show and they do well, right? And they see me doing my thing for them. So when you get a photo after, it's like a real photo. That's why I have a lot of good photos because these guys you get them after you work with them, after they see what you do, and they're grateful, usually. Most guys were.
Yeah, because it's one thing if they don't know who you are and you just say, let me get a photograph. But, like, once you've built up that rapport, then it's great. And
it's a different look in their eye.
And all of our listeners should definitely follow you on Instagram at Brody Is Me Friend.
You got it. Based off Tony and Mr. Lee, my bus boys in New York from Albania and Hong Kong. Brody, you good guy, you me friend. Brody, you good guy, you me friend. And that's an homage to Tony and Mr. Lee, and enjoy it. That's an homage to the lady who worked at McDonald's in Tempe, Arizona, my freshman year, and I was kind of homesick, 1988. I would go to McDonald's there on just east of Apache and rural Maine is what it's also called. Anyway, so I would go there. I'd read the L.A. Times, I think on Sunday, bring in the L.A. or maybe the Arizona Republic, but I think the L.A. Times, because we used to get it. Sunday, and I'd read, and I remember I'd go up to the counter, right? So I'd order, and I would, she had a little bit of a loose arm kind of thing, like one of the arms.
Yeah.
Something was not right with the arm.
Sort of my Little League coach.
There you go.
Yeah.
Something was.
And he would try to hug you with it, and it was not comfortable.
Right. It would just flap.
It would flap, and he would wave you over. By the way, when I was a fat kid going for a triple, which, by the way, he scolded me for after. He's like, don't ever do that again. He's like, you're going to get out every time. But he would try to wave me around, but like I couldn't tell if he was waving me or telling me to stop because the arm was so stubby.
Right, or mixing espresso.
I couldn't tell if he was trying to...
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he was involved in a mime exercise right. or if he maybe was telling me to steal.
Maybe he's doing an impression of the wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man that's out front of car dealership.
Are those even still there? Those should be taken out.
Enough, right?
Yeah.
Enough is enough.
Well, see ya.
I think Trump would get a few more votes. He's like, you know what we're going to get rid of? We're going to get rid of the wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube men. I don't like them. We're going to build a wall around them. We're going to send them to Mexico. They're going to pay for it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
nice.
Great impression also.
Thank you. It's the most luxurious impression that I have.
It's good. I love impressions.
Yeah.
Fun.
Do you do any?
No. I mean, I can if I thought about it. But what we were talking about, the hand.
Yes.
Oh, enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Right. Yeah.
McDonald's.
So it'd be a Sunday, 1988. I loved fall in Arizona, like on Sundays in the fall.
Yeah.
Like a Sunday today. We're in fall now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I would drive.
It's perfect weather.
Exactly. I would drive out to deep in the, like Mesa, out there and just breathe and the mounds and the openness and the flatness. Actually, the flatness made me, I got homesick for hills. Because it's so flat. I mean, it's pretty much flat in Phoenix for the most part. So that was kind of a weird thing. But
Homesick for Hills, by the way, sounds like the next follow-up to The Notebook.
I like that. Homesick for Hills.
Homesick for Hills.
I like that.
The next Nicholas Sparks novel. Yeah. Why do I know who that author
Homesick
is?
Homesick for the Hills.
That wrote The Notebook?
For the Hills.
Care. For the Hill? Homesick for the Hills.
Yeah, starring Stephen Brody Stevens.
and Zac Efron.
Yeah.
There you go. Brody Stevens, obviously playing the romantic lead, has way better arms than Zac.
He's got good arms. My arms are probably longer than Zach's.
Which is why they're better.
Well, he's buff now. That guy's like ripped. Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Strong diet.
I would, diet's everything, they say. So I would go to the McDonald's, speaking of diet, and so I would order a number one, like a Big Mac special.
Big Mac. Like
is that what
man.
It's called? I'll take the Big Mac special. You mean the number one? Oh, yeah.
No, well, they always have to correct you. Why can't they just say yes?
It's special to me.
Yeah.
I don't get it all the time. Big Mac special.
Well, they have a special sauce.
Yeah.
Just making it specific. Specifically special.
Specifically special.
Stevens making it specifically special.
Say that five times fast.
Homesick for the Hills on a specifically special Sunday night. Stephen Brody Stevens. Serendipity.
This fall on the CW.
There you go.
So where does Enjoy It come into play with this McDonald's
Thank
barista?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, barista. This was before baristing. They had a coffee plantation, actually. This is before Starbucks. So, and I learned to drink coffee in Seattle. Nobody went to Starbucks back in the day. Starbucks was like the enemy in 1994 up in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Oh, I better wrap the story up because we do have to go to the
store. Can you give us 10 more minutes?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. I'm watching the clock.
Hi, everybody. I'm Stephen SBS. I'm Stephen SBS. So I would go there, and I would order the number one, you know, and I'd come back, and I remember she would slide it over on the metal. It was like a metal counter back then. She would, like, enjoy. She was, like, very happy with the food. It was like she took pride in her job.
Wow.
And she'd go, look you in the eye, but she had the little arm, and she would shuffle the tray over. Enjoy. Giving you that energy. Enjoy.
She wasn't just giving you a Big Mac special. She was giving you – the Big Mac special was code for positive energy.
There you go. I've gotten through these – if you want to call it a disability,
yeah.
I don't. I call it an opportunity.
Yeah.
I'll take that disability into an opportunity.
I like it.
Enjoy.
Wow. That resonated.
It did. But then, and this was like the clincher. I'm already throwing around enjoy it. You know, baseball players, we pick up on stuff. You know, words. I'm better than you. Simple. Or enjoy it, of course, was one. So then, maybe a few weeks later, I was going through the Wendy's drive-thru.
Oh, you treacherous pig.
On rural, just south of Apache, Maine, around the corner from the McDonald's. Going through the drive-thru, I order a double. No onions, no pickles, no tomatoes. The combination, and I'd also like a Frosty.
Yeah,
and they were chocolate, but they were you had no choice chocolate. It was they didn't have vanilla back then.
No.
You just had to say Frosty.
Yeah,
but I think I would specify chocolate Frosty because they were always chocolate. I go, I'd like a small chocolate Frosty.
So you get when you're like, thank you for listening to my order.
Yeah, right.
I appreciate it.
Because they didn't have that option back then. So I remember I went, it was the drive-thru this time, and I drove through, pulled around to the window, and lo and behold, I see that little hand.
Oh, my God.
I see that hand cradling that small chocolate frosty. And it was, I saw it. And I pulled up, and it was with the frosty, the hand.
No.
And I also had a burger coming, too. Let's be honest. I was waiting on that.
Sure.
Let's not
enjoy. Enjoy.
She's following you around.
Wait, wait. You're at Wendy's? If you care so much about your job, your fast food.
Delivery.
Energy. Delivery. Energy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to Wendy's. I'm gonna pick them up. I'm gonna get that McDonald's running how it needs to run. Because I have pride.
Sure.
I have Tempe pride.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna go to Wendy's around the corner.
And share my good fortune.
And work the drive through. Yeah. Get in there and give the positive
push.
The care. It might not even be a positive. She just cared.
She's like the Larry Brown of fast food employees. She goes to a fast food restaurant,
sure.
Builds it up, gets it running.
Wins a championship.
Right, yeah, right when it
with
starts.
With the customer.
Yeah, right starts when it starts getting its own legs, and she goes, you know what? My work is done here. And she moves on to the next one.
She's wow. Like that. I think she left on good terms, whereas Larry Brown and me, we leave on bad terms. Keith Oberman, bad terms. Brody, because that's what happens. I just clash, and it's a, you know, I've had my run-ins. That's the funny thing about Hollywood show business.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a bad show or not be their particular kind, type, for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
or do something wrong, and you get fired. It's like, you're gone. They don't call you back. You're not in the. You're gone.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in sports, you'll go, you know, try and do. I'm not saying always like yeah. that, but a lot of times it's you're gone. Whereas in sports, like, you can go to AAA, get it going again.
Yeah.
But I feel like in sometimes
frickin,
in the
freaking Greg Hardy. Oh, you punched
that guy's
a woman.
Trash. He's
yeah,
got it.
Yeah, you threw a girl in a bed full of guns.
Here's the deal. That
take
guy
come back.
I won't. I'm not. Here's an example. There's a lot of guys like me. I guarantee you, there's a lot of guys who don't watch football because of. Not specifically the Greg Hardy, but yeah. now more so that it's out in this Deadspin thing.
Yeah.
People don't like that.
Yeah.
They don't. It's bad. It's bad energy.
And you have to respond.
Horrible energy.
The Cowboys or the NFL has to take action.
It's bad because I haven't watched one down of football. Not one.
Wow.
It's protesting. You're forcing the fantasy on me. The fantasy football. You're letting the Greg Hardy thing is not. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Let's be honest. Those FanDuel commercials, by the way, are creepy as hell. All those guys seem slime balls. They seem so stressed. They seem like they just got done jerking off in their friend's basement, and then had to go. And then they're on camera telling someone how much they won when they actually lost double the amount they're saying they won, and they're not even thinking about the commercial they have to film. They're thinking about how they have to tell their wife and or girlfriend, soon to be ex-wife or girlfriend, that they lost said amount. So they're so like, FanDuel's the greatest ever. I won $5,500
yeah.
because I picked the Cardinals to win every week's a new season, man.
Oh,
and you're like,
man.
Dude, who's holding the gun to your dick and why are you sweating through your ears? This is not normal, Scott or Ted. I want to talk about...
Adam Ray's book, Who's Holding the Gun to Your Dick, coming out later this winter.
Well, unless Judy Blume's already done it.
Sure.
Now, I want to know, we have 5 minutes left, and we have to talk about this. Tanum Brody.
Oh, yeah, Seattle.
Seattle. So when you get up to Seattle, because when I saw you at a Best Damn Sports Show taping mm-hmm. in 2003, well, I was a sophomore at SC,
mm-hmm.
And my buddies came down from Seattle for the summer, and we went, and that was a crazy moment for all of us, and... You've had an influential – that was big to me because seeing Tanum Brody on Public Access in Seattle, first of all, gave me a first taste of like, oh, wow, these guys are so funny, and you were famous in Seattle, you know, and in my eyes, I'm like, well, this show should be on like regular TV because mm-hmm. you guys were that entertaining, and just something was – coming through the TV in a very like low budget show, but you guys, the way that you took the calls and interacted with each other was very the chemistry, and it just shined through the TV. So then to see you doing, in our eyes, Best Known Sports Show was one of the biggest sports shows still to this day of all time. Combining comedy and sports like that with celebrities and jokes and sketches was great. And then so we see you at the helm of that, like as you were saying, like we thought you were running that show,
orchestrating the studio.
Yes, that was a huge deal for me because I was like, holy shit, this, like, it was inspiring on many levels. That
because you went from a public access show in Seattle to the best damn sports show.
Yeah, so
I did.
And it also just seemed. Also, it gave me a lot of. I was like, oh, cool. People recognized what I saw. When I was watching on public access, which I don't know if there's got to be clips of this online, right?
Tim, there's a already, few.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of tapes.
Yeah. At some point, I'm going to want to make a documentary about that. Maybe the world of public access, and maybe you're at the helm.
Well, there is one, actually. It's the Jeffro Brunk work. There's actually a cable access documentary. I think it just came out.
Really? Is Shannon Cringan involved in it?
I think so, yeah.
Now, for the listeners who don't know who Shannon Cringan is,
wow.
She is the 300-pound woman who, by the way, this is my
She was more like 200.
You're right.
Go ahead.
You're right.
300 was a theme. Theme of this podcast. Or, you know, Butch Wolf, 300. She was 300 feet tall.
She was, you know what, you're right. She wasn't three bills because... Because even at as high school Adam, I was like, those tits don't look that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And she
I mean, I wasn't into it, but her, that.
That's well, straight. You, I mean, I'm straight. You maybe been with that. Women at that point. I had not.
Yes, I had been. I was on cable access.
Yeah.
Of course he was with women.
This show preceded Tana and Brody. All right, we got a few minutes left. 2 minutes. This show preceded Tana and Brody or came after. I can't remember.
The
Shannon Cringan show.
I think she was on a little bit before, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that was like a block.
I think.
That was like, if you were to say like Thursday night TV, like Friends, Seinfeld, Cheers. Mm-hmm. That
it was Shannon Cringan, Dr. Bruce Howard,
yeah.
Who's like a crazy Satan. I don't know if you say eighth. He was crazy.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. What do they have? The bowl challenge, the smoke-o bowl challenge,
yes.
Bong hit championships, how long you can hit the bong hit.
I love that.
During your time on that show, I want to know, what did you take from that? What are your fondest memories of that show? Whether it was weird calls or Seattle in general, the vibe of it that you took to L.A., and what do you, if you could go back and go, oh, man, now with this experience I have, if I had a show again on TV like that.
Okay. Well, thank you for all that.
Yeah.
And this will be my dismail.
Yeah.
But this could be a whole show.
I know. Well, sure.
This is teasing part two.
You're coming back.
Yeah. I'll come back.
Yeah.
I'll come back soon.
Okay, good.
Parking wasn't bad. So when I went up to Seattle, I felt like I had to handle comedy. I wanted to handle it like baseball.
Yeah.
Very, like, get everything out that I learn everything about it, books, doing it. Just soaking the way, but I always, you know, I had to work too. It wasn't like, I understand, like, but I would stay with my family. I didn't have that pressure of like, you're going to be homeless. You have to make money. I had the luxury of being able to stay in Mercer Island or Renton or Bellevue, where I was with some family.
Nice parts of town.
Exactly. And get acclimated. And so I worked at the comedy club, at the Comedy Underground. So I learned about how like a 3-person show on the road is run, the fundamentals of comedy, seating a room. I was so nervous even to make the off mic intro before the show. It was like, I wasn't comfortable like that.
Yeah.
But I learned everything about it, and I would do the open mics. That was about it. And there was a couple, this early on, there's a couple comedians there who were had a cable access show, and they had a little bit of a following. It was like, oh, these guys got like followers, and they, you know, interesting. And they're not, weren't like the most amazing comedians. I thought they were pretty good, but it's like, wow, they got a whole nother thing going on.
Yeah.
So I followed around a comedian, Drew Marks. I don't know if you know him. Like a long time ago.
Yeah.
I said, can I go see you perform down like in the, you know, Renton or Federal Way or wherever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so I went with them, watched like a bar gig, and then he came back to the cable access studio. Just like help out with there, hang out in the audience. And I went there. I go, wow, there's like a TV show here. There's crew. There's guys doing this stuff, and it's fun. All right. And then I'm thinking, like, how can I do that? Because it's practice. Yep. I'm all into doing it. And then you go, oh, yeah, there's this new Hotline Studio coming out where you don't have to hire crew. I didn't want to hire crew.
No.
I didn't want to have to, like, go to a study a – and I can tell you how I got into Cairo Sports, too. I was an intern. I went to Bellevue Community College. I went back to school to sign up because I officially had to go be work at Cairo Sports and interview guys at the Kingdom. I'd go down to the Kingdom, interview Randy Johnson, Mike Blowers, Edgar Martinez. Scary.
Randy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Screamed at me once. It's spring training because I put a baseball in his
face. I get it. I get it.
Back away from the truck.
I get it.
I'll never forget it.
That's a scary feeling. I get that.
6'10 coming down at you?
Yes. Yeah, a scary guy went to USC.
Yeah.
There you go.
Fight on.
So
I met him at the X Games. He said he wouldn't take a picture of me because he said, I don't trust what you're going to do with it on the internet. Randy Johnson, if you're listening, you are a dick.
Wow. Go on my Flickr site. I have a photo of Randy Johnson. Yes, you got it. Positive push.
So jealous.
So anyway, with the cable access, I saw they're getting stage time. Wow, TV time. So that this whole Hotline Studio came out. They go, take a half-hour class, and then you're on. You can take calls.
Wow.
The cameras are locked down. So I did I did that, and I did with James Inman, who was a popular comedian up there. We did like 10 shows. We would argue. He was kind of like liberal. I was more Arizona conservative angle, like what's with these bike protests, what's going on.
Yeah.
We would argue, and then Manu is like, was super funny. We got along. He kind of also was a positive energy guy. He validated this, like, positive. He's from the islands. He's a good guy. But he also lived in Arizona, so he got that Arizona energy.
Totally.
And he also had family up in Seattle. I had family. He lived there. So Tana was just a great guy. Everybody liked him. And so we started – somehow we started doing the show, and then it just, like, took off. And Tana was very funny, taught me a lot about – we influenced each other.
Yeah.
And – we didn't curse, really, because you could do whatever you want on that.
Yeah.
We would go and go to the porn convention and interview these poor girls and not show nudity.
Yeah.
Now, we could easily have done that.
Yeah.
So my theory, my feeling behind the cable access show was like, this is TV. We're on, you know, you got Leno on 4 or whatever, NBC. You got Brody and Tana there, like you were saying.
Yeah.
So in my eyes, I'm doing a TV show. I'm playing to the camera, live camera without a net, taking calls. Then you just made it goofy. And that's what I did it. So I did it as a training and also, training. And I knew I'd get people yelling at me on the street, Jews and Samoans rule the world. Yes, that kind of stuff. So I had like a little bit of a following.
Yeah,
did.
Love it.
But I felt like it was hurting my stand-up. And it wasn't, a couple more minutes. It felt like it was hurting my stand-up because I felt like I was becoming this Brody Tana TV guy, and it wasn't truly who I was.
Yeah.
So I felt like that's why I want to go to New York. I felt like I tapped out in Seattle, meaning like you start there. So I became, a host.
Yeah.
A couple guest spots. And then Joey Diaz said to me, Craig Gass is up there, Josh Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
There's others too. Mitch Hedberg for a time. I remember seeing Mitch Hedberg, right? He was up there for like 5 months when I was there. And he would hang out with Jeff Masterson, who's the one who did the cable access show. And he told me, he said, Brody, there's going to be thousands of channels. Just keep doing what you're doing. And he was right. And you know what?
Yeah.
He was right. And then he committed suicide. I hate to be a downer.
Yeah.
Fuck. But
Do you got any more McDonald's enjoy stories?
I'm sorry. No, but you actually, hey, I'm glad he told me that.
Yeah.
You know, so you kind of like keep performing. You give respect to that. That guy really did tell me. He wasn't the greatest guy in the world. He kind of rubbed, but he's blunt, but he believed in me and told me do that.
Yeah.
So I did that. And when I remember I moved back here to LA, he would call me sometimes. You know, these guys from Seattle would call me, and it was nice when people spoke on the phone. But I did that, and I just felt like, okay, Joey Diaz said, Brody, you got to go to New York. You got to go. Like, they'll get you there. You can just talk. Just go there.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend, Mike Brazella, who I grew up with, he was a coach of the Yankees. He got the job through Joe Torre and all that stuff. Joe Torre, it all comes together. It was at the Yankees in 96, then won the World Series. Brody come out here, and then I said, okay, I can do surf free. That's where I studied all the New York stuff. I always wanted to go as a kid. I was just, had something of wanting to go there.
Yeah.
So I went there. So that's when I just jumped. Same thing, just open mic, surf reality. But I had to work. I worked at Red Robin in Seattle. I sold the T-shirts for the Supersonics, public speaking. And then when I went to New York, I was a tour guide at Radio City. I did everything where I could talk, train myself to be fearless in any city, New York City. I had to go there. Yeah. But I wasn't like a comedy store or comedy seller guy or comic strip. I wasn't there. So, and a lot of these guys knew me as a barker. That's the thing. Like, I felt like it took me years to get over. Oh, Dave Attell. Oh, you do comedy too? I didn't realize that. You're a barker. Godfrey. Out front
getting people to come in.
Exactly. Yeah. Jim Norton. But not that I hold it against him.
Yeah.
But guys like Greg Giraldo was always super nice to me. The guys were nice.
Yeah.
Judah was super nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these guys, they would, you know, I'd get over that hump.
Yeah.
I think I'm over it now, but.
For sure you are.
New York was where I really like just. Seattle, I found my voice. New York, I honed it. I found my voice in Seattle. And then I took what I liked about and what was good. Like guys told me, Brody, just talk, do this. So then I went to New York, kind of kept that same feeling. And I did that. And so many of my friends from New York, that's a whole other story, working out here in L.A. I started open mics with Alex Sulkin, Family Guy, Ted.
Yeah.
So you
take Sulk on Twitter.
Exactly. You take pride in that. You take a feel like, hey, we did open mics together. We'd hang out. I guarantee you, a couple of those characters are based off Brody. You got it. But those are little things that give you confidence, moral connections, even if it's the 1% thing.
Found your voice in Seattle, flexed it in New York.
Flexed it in New York.
And then brought it through L.A. to the world so that everybody can
enjoy it.
You got it. I want to know the
let's
mom.
I want to do a whole other thing.
We will. You're coming back, but I want to know, because your mom's a big supporter of you, what is her best compliment of Brody's comedy in your career? The best compliment your mom's ever thrown to you.
Yeah.
But the best compliment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad. The best thing she said to you about something she's seen you do.
She's always proud.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think overall she's proud that I'll tell you what my mom is proud about.
My mom just sent me an email saying they're making a new Sherlock Holmes movie with Daniel Craig. I think you'd be great in it. You should try to get in that.
My mom is not that way at all. My mom yells at me. Mm-hmm. My mom is she doesn't necessarily get it. Is what I'm saying. She, like, when I do my smile, I hate your smile. Like, she doesn't, she knows me.
Yeah.
She knows me as little Steven. You know, she doesn't quite get Brody.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but she appreciates that I made it on my own. She always, you know, you made it on your own, which I did because I didn't have any family in the business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I cut through it. So she appreciates
You're not related to Cat Stevens.
No. No, I'm not. I'm not related to...
I like that you went through, like, every celebrity in your head.
Connie Stevens is another one.
Connie Stevens.
But, so my mom is like that, so that's very...
Has she seen your stand-up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable with her coming to shows like that. I'm over that. She's funny. She'd even know I don't want to be on camera, and I'm respectful of her. You know, she's older. I want her to, you know, look good. But she's been to Best Damn Sports Show. She's been to my shows, so in terms of, like, I'm nervous my mom's here, it's like, I'm not.
Well, Brody,
which is nice.
You always have that positive energy, and
you got it.
Anyone that comes to see you will leave your show with positive energy themselves.
Well, they will see mathematical formula take place. You know what? I do the main room tonight at the Comedy Store. I'll close it, so I do close to an hour at the end.
That's amazing.
I'll do from 12:30 to 1:30, and it's a lot of crowd work, and it's a lot of where are you from, what do you do, boom, boom, this, that, and then I'll go, did any other comedians ask that? No. Why is it me, 3 hours into the show, I'm celebrating your birthday now? Nobody else mentioned it, because they don't care. And then you walk around, and go, I want to feel you.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I can do that kind of out-of-the-box stuff, it's late at night. There's no other comedian after me.
Right.
I would never, like, do it totally to throw off a show. So you've got to – it's just put out energy. Just get that going. See where that – go from there.
Yeah.
Successful people will tell you that's, you know, something you want to have.
You're the best.
And on that note, I'm Stephen Brody Stevens. Positive push. Yes. You got it. Enjoy.
Can help you get through the fucking day. everybody, it's me, Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast, give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.